Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scoop. I'm your host, Frank Chaparro, Director of Special Projects at The Block, and we have a very special episode of the show for you today. It feels like you've been on the show, Monica Long, because we had that lovely conference session in Paris over a year ago, but you have not. This is the first time you're joining us, obviously, president at Ripple. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Frank. I'm honored to be a guest on The Scoop. Yeah, first time on your show. But yes, we had a very good time in Paris. It was like a year ago now, which it felt like, you know, just yesterday.
I know. Well, we'll have to catch up on everything that's transpired since then.
Great.
Let's start with just a basic question that I sometimes start a show with. How's business?
It's going great. Yes, let's see. Since we last spoke, much has transpired. Of course, last July, we heard a decision from the U.S. courts on Ripple's case with the SEC, providing clarity around, XRP. It is in and of itself not a security. Our use cases for XRP in payments, it created a lot of clarity of how to move the business forward in the U.S. in a way that the government would bless. So business has continued to grow. Our focus from payments has now expanded. So I think when we last spoke, we were mostly still focused around serving cross-border payments. When we went about serving that use case, we had to build some infrastructure in order to make it work. Namely, connectivity between blockchains and traditional financial rails, like, the payment systems in each country. So we can support, connectivity to payouts in more than 80 markets now, as well as custody as another key infrastructure component, which we've acquired through acquiring the company Medico last May. It was a year ago now, 1 year anniversary. And then also, we've built a bunch of different compliance features in order to serve our payments customers. So how's business today? It's the payments business grows, but then we've identified kind of new opportunities for Ripple to be a holistic enterprise blockchain infrastructure provider. So you think about a financial institution that wants to do payments, or maybe in the future, different types of real-world asset tokenization. We can provide that kind of end-to-end infrastructure.
How much has the fog of war being lifted with the SEC opened the doors or deepened new existing business relationships?
It's a great question. The clarity around XRP specifically has been very helpful, very, very helpful. The overall temperament of the U.S. government, I'll be more specific, of the SEC. The U.S. SEC has not slowed down its war on crypto. It's only accelerated. Of course, you've seen many, many friends and peers in the industry also getting sued or receiving Wells notices, et cetera. So it's quite clear the SEC's agenda is to roll through enforcement, which we don't think as an industry, we don't think that's the right way to go about it. We'd rather see rules. So I would say through that, along with like things like the accounting rules, is it SOB 121, that kind of put a chill on banks engaging with digital asset forms of business and taking on new types of crypto offerings. So I would say in the U.S., Ripple's, we're still a part of a broader industry. Resolution from our case has been super helpful specifically for XRP, but we're still playing with the same kind of constraints on the regulatory front that everyone else is.
I know for folks who are maybe familiar with Ripple and its sort of, arenas of business, right? How would you delineate those business lines? And then we can get into the extent to which some form of regulatory clarity around XRP has facilitated some growth And maybe we can get into some other tailwinds and headwinds.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that, Frank. You're absolutely right. So payments has been the flagship, and on-demand liquidity is our product offering of how we're reducing the pre-funding requirements for any kind of payments business. So any payment service provider that's providing cross-border payments can use this product to make it more efficient, more transparent, reliable, and then also more or cheaper, more cost efficient to serve those types of payments. So by and large, our customer set is payment companies. And then with the acquisition of Medico, which is now Ripple Custody, a lot of those customers are banks, a lot of large banks of the BBVA, SocGen type. And then the third set of, they're not customers because they're not, we're not selling them services, but the types of audience or partners who we engage with are developers, crypto developers. So this is for the work that we do through Ripple X, which is all about continuing to add new innovations to XRP Ledger and to create developer programs, some developer support and different DevRel programs to help developers, see their projects through on XRP Ledger. So those are our three main categories. And I would actually say in the more recent years, in contrast to the situation in the US, where we've seen more growth is where governments have created regulation. So places like Europe, MiCA has been tremendous turning point. Places like Singapore, with the MAS putting forward the MPI license, makes it really clear the licensing you need to get to be a digital asset token business, which we acquired that license. In other markets like Hong Kong and Brazil, Brazil is a really interesting one because you have clarity from the government of how they're going to, the government legitimized crypto assets, recognized them as a legitimate category, and then said, hey, central bank, you can regulate cryptocurrencies and their uses in places like payments. And then CVM, which is the SEC in Brazil, you're going to regulate capital markets use cases. And then we've seen really positive public-private partnership, and they've invited the industry to kind of comment on some ideas around regulation. So actually, what I would say is we've gotten tailwinds, and we've seen more bursts of growth or places like Asia, the Middle East, the UAE, Dubai has been another set of regulators that's leading the way, Europe and Brazil.
Walk us through the payments business. What type of customers are there? And how is it growing?
Yeah, so life to date, we've now processed more than $60 billion in payments. A lot of the traction has been outside the U.S. For all the reasons we just talked about.
What are the popular corridors?
Popular corridors, a lot of flows in Asia Pac, like Singapore, Europe, Australia, still plenty of demand driven out of the US dollar has, our decision to launch a stable coin, a US dollar stable coin more specifically this year. Yeah. And so a lot of the growth has been kind of in those key corridors.
So walk us through the logic and thinking behind the launch of a stable coin. When a lot of people think about the value proposition or the positioning of both XRP and Ripple as a company and XRP as a core component of the sort of product suite that Ripple offers, they think of it as maybe being almost a competitor or sort of an alternative to a stablecoin. So what was the thinking? What sort of things can stablecoins do that XRP can't and vice versa?
It's a great question. We think of them as complementary and additive. So I'll take two of the kind of customer sets or audience sets that we talked about, payment companies and then developers. In the context of payments and that part of our business, there are plenty of use cases where for the customer, actually seeing the transaction through in US dollars is what the customer wants, or it's just the most cost-efficient option. And when you think about major corridors like US dollar, euro, there's a lot of liquidity there. You don't really need a bridge asset like XRP. That was the inventors of the ledger, the way that they'd always talked about. And, you know, when I think back to the very early days of Ripple, what we had always talked about was the use case for a neutral cryptocurrency as a bridge asset. So like XRP in this case would be for in the future of the Internet of Value, there's going to be all kinds of things tokenized on chain. And you need an asset like that for really efficient cross-currency or cross-token settlement that are, it's the, more the long tail. Let me simplify. It's more the long tail of assets and currencies where the costs, when you think in the context of cross-border payments, you have different currency crosses between, you know, a sub-Saharan African country and the Middle East or Europe. And the liquidity is not as great. The costs are very high. You could pay, you know, north of 10% on that in fees for a payment like that. So that's where we see XRP having its role in the context of developers as another group. The US dollar has been the on-ramp for our whole industry, right? It's like how you, it's the starting point mostly for any kind of buying cryptocurrency or other type of tokenized asset. It's a starting point for trading. And that's where within XRP Ledger, and we still think there's so much more upside potential for the XRP Ledger's DEX, the decentralized exchange. There needs to be high quality stable coins available on that exchange for it to be more useful for all types of developers. And we've been more focused on DeFi. So you think about DeFi, USD stables are the key starting ingredient.
Well, you know, we're obviously in a very interesting time for stable coins right now. And I would expand that. I would say we're in an interesting time for stable coin like things, right? Because there's a lot of things that kind of maybe people call stable coins that aren't, or some derivative of it. And obviously at the same time, right? Stable coin supply continues to march higher. And everyone's targeting different groups and there's different use cases. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of money to be made. I mean, is this in some form, you know, you guys can get a piece of that pie. It's almost a no-brainer, right? Tether's printing, well, not printing in that sense, but is making billions of dollars because of the high interest rate environment in which we have found ourselves. How does Ripple get a piece of that?
It's a big pie. What is it? Market cap of USD stables right now is like $160 billion, and it's going to get much bigger. So the projections we've seen are close to $3 trillion by within the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. I think a lot of that will be driven by expansion of institutional DeFi adoption. So some of those projects that you're talking about, I think, are really critical to continue to build the momentum with institutional DeFi. I think the pie is going to get bigger and bigger. Key to success of a stablecoin is, I'm going to sound very Captain Obvious here, but the stability. The importance of like a one-to-one back of US dollar to the tokenized dollar. And how are the reserves managed? We went about acquiring a company, Standard Custody, earlier this year. Standard Custody has the very coveted New York Trust License, which so it means they're regulated by New York DFS, one of very highly respected regulator, not just in the U.S., but internationally. And there's stringent rules around how you manage the reserves. So I think the trust in the stablecoin to stay stable, adherence to complying to rules and regulations for how different countries and regions are going to treat stable coins. Lots of eyes on Europe right now in that way. That's all going to be critical to like make or break the success of a stablecoin, I think.
When you think about where it fits in terms of what part of the pie it will eat up, how are you selling it? Pretend I'm a Fortune 100 company and I'm asking you, you know, you're trying to get me on board with the stablecoin. What am I going to use it for?
What you can expect to see from us initially is first and foremost, a focus on introducing the stablecoin to our payments customers. So we'll first focus on the licensed payment companies and banks who we already serve, because the different stablecoins, different assets other than XRP have been a part of our mix for the last year plus. And again, it comes back to, well, what is the actual use case for the customer? If it's a USD flow, just use a USD stable. That's very logical. Or, you know, if there's cost efficiency to gain through using a stablecoin pair, let's do that. So we'll focus first where we already have our business and the demand. But, you know, I think that liquidity for stablecoins, a lot of it is coming from the more retail markets, the, you know, traders and, you mentioned the exchanges as a key distribution point. I think that's been key to building liquidity and market cap for all the stablecoins. So that's a tried and true recipe.
Do you think it'll be part of your recipe?
Yeah, I think that, creating a distribution network and points of access for stablecoin will be important.
What other sort of initiatives are underway at the firm that are a priority for the second half of the year?
So, yes, the launch of stablecoin is certainly a big area of focus for us.
Well, we can maybe spend a bit more time there. How do you think about hiring for that? I mean, where do you even start? How does you get from day one to day 100 and then actually go to market?
Yeah. A lot of the work and preparations have been underway for some time now. So, our partnerships and business development team, they've already been hard at work on banking relationships and, you know, other distribution partnerships. The work that we do for Ripple X partnerships just means different developers and, you know, established crypto companies using XRP Ledger. So through that network, we already have, quite a few, I would say, DeFi-related partnerships that could easily be integrated here with the stablecoin. Through our work for years and years and years on payments and then custody, a lot of these banks, you know, they're no stranger to Ripple. We've worked with them in the past. So it's been more just, you know, expanding those relationship conversations with who would be partners for the stablecoin. The development work has been well underway. A lot of the work that we did on tokenizing central bank digital currencies and partnerships with central banks has transference to stablecoin issuance. And you also mentioned, there's other ways to think about how stablecoins could play for Ripple or how Ripple could serve a stablecoin market. We're really focused on the launch of our own. Plenty of customers, especially through our custody business, the banks are so interested in tokenizing real-world assets. We have a few different customers who already are tokenizing securities. We've certainly heard the request of, you know, tokenizing money, so stablecoins. So I think there's, you know, more ways to play there.
Does Ripple have some sort of offering that helps facilitate tokenization of real-world assets?
Through our custody product, yes. Yes, we're able to support customers with that use case. It's really interesting, tokenizing different real-world assets, depending on what the use case is, could require, a lot depending on what the customer is actually seeking to do. Tokenization has become this word that kind of means everything and nothing at the same time, right? It's like, you know, the world's 10% of the world's GDP is going to be tokenized in the next however many years. I'm sure you've heard that one. But yes, because we're in this blockchain industry, we believe blockchain is this amazing internet magic that's going to make financial systems a lot more efficient and can really break away from the siloed networks and the inefficiencies associated with those for all types of use cases. So we certainly see that applying places like capital markets. We know it applies to payments because we've been doing that for a long time, but we certainly believe in that future.
What are clients keen to tokenize?
I think probably the most common assets are things like money market funds, in some cases, stable coins. That's what they're asking about. Also securities.
So clients are asking about stable coins in as much as they want to launch their own or they want to use it for something.
There's a little bit of both. We've certainly seen that. I don't know if you would agree, but like this kind of posture shift, we have noticed more large institutions, standing up straighter and leaning in more to tokenizing securities and bonds, et cetera, as they're following the lead of players like BlackRock and Franklin Templeton.
But now that there's been a big shift, right? I mean, there's political pressure to create more clarity. And then there's just interest that we haven't seen for more serious interest. So with that stage set up, it'll be interesting to see what 2025 looks like, because you have basically, at the end of the day, two of the biggest headwinds in crypto remedied, which is regulatory risk and reputational headline risk to an extent. You know, there's not really, there are a lot of important companies out there, but, BlackRock is probably the biggest. And if they're doing something, it would probably be foolish not to do it for fear of reprisal or headline risk. I mean, that's one of the most conservative companies there are. I mean, and they hate the press. I shouldn't say that per se, but they certainly don't like the ire of the press. And so the fact that they're not concerned with getting in on this and having the risk of reputational risk is just pretty staggering in my view. And so you see other companies falling in line and probably falling over themselves because they're so late.
I think it's really positive to see and BlackRock being one, Goldman Sachs being another, even JP Morgan, where you have the CEO making grand statements about Bitcoin's a fraud how many years ago. But they're certainly one of the large institutions that is investing quite heavily into innovation in this realm. But I think overall, there has to have been a come to Jesus realization: this technology is not going away. Even if, Gary Gensler and the SEC, this version of the SEC has their way, you can't enforce or even regulate the technology away. So the better approach, the smarter approach is, how do we figure out, just like the internet, I know a lot of people in the industry draw that parallel, but how do you figure out how to protect consumers and enable innovation? And even in the U.S., I was saying some kind of dark things about the outlook here earlier, so I'll say this, the rays of hope and sunshine that we see. Some of the more recent bills that are coming up, the legislation around FIT 21 and some of the stablecoin bills being addressed, they're bipartisan. You're seeing, legislators from both camps coming together to understand and realize it's much better if we create some rules that are sensible and so that the America doesn't miss out on the pie. Like BlackRock, they had to have realized, wow, what a boon launching a Bitcoin ETF would be. They were right. It's kind of right there in front of you that there's a massive opportunity for business as well and to expand the economic pie.
What are you most excited about? Maybe something that we haven't talked about that is on your desk.
So I do, at the top of the our conversation, I was talking about how, you know, Ripple's become more than payments. We believe this, the infrastructure that we've built, I think what the whole industry probably underestimated when we first started working on different, applying blockchain to financial use cases, we underestimated how hard it would be and how much time it would take to connect the new system, blockchain, with the old. So we've, like, all of the years that we've spent on that, I do think that's really valuable. And if you think of a global off-ramp network for crypto, that's powerful, not just for the payment companies we're serving. I think that Ripple's in a position where we can serve a lot of enterprise use cases for finance. So you can expect us to kind of expand beyond payments as a use case. Secondly, because we were just talking about ETFs, I think it would be very sensible for someone to launch an XRP ETF. XRP has been, you know, trading is one of the, within the top 10 for how long? Maybe its entire life. And on the top exchanges like Coinbase and Kraken, it's certainly in the top five of daily volume. Oh, the other factor there, because of the court's ruling last year, XRP and Bitcoin are the only two crypto assets in the United States with clarity from the government. Like, that's pretty meaningful. So I would be interested to see what transpires by way of additional ETFs. We're all excited about the ETH ETFs coming up, but I'm also excited to see more.
I would assume. Maka, thanks so much for taking the time to join the program.
Thank you, Frank. It was a real pleasure. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. Thank you.